Radio. This is Pet Life Radio. Let's talk pets.
And thumbs are up, and here we are. So anyway, welcome, welcome, welcome. My Pal Chaser, you're number one today. That's great. And hopefully there'll be many more. But anyway, here for you, here for your pets. You know the drill. And Dr. Jeff Warbrick, you want to get a hold of me, you can call in. Toll free 877-385-8882. Once again, 877-385-8882. If you're here on Instagram Live, welcome, welcome. And we have two of you already, and hopefully there'll be more. And get your questions ready. We want some questions. Otherwise, if you're here on Pet Life Radio, all you have to do is you can join us live, which would be great. Also, here on Pet Life Radio and on Instagram, you can join us live if you have something really good you want to talk about. If you're not shy on the camera, then please join us. Anyway, so, you know, first of all, I always say, you know, weather-wise, here we are in LA. And I was just telling Mark, our producer, who's based in Florida, they're used to the warm weather pretty much even during the winter. And we're talking about rain. Here in LA, we had not such a great, great April. You know, April, we say April showers, we get that. But yesterday was the first day that we really had sunshine here in May. And it was what? Yesterday was the 10th. And now it's great. So today here in LA, just to make you jealous, first of all, gorgeous blue skies. It's going to be 83 here in LA. 88 or 90 in the valley. And so that is really, really great. So I'm waving to those who joined. Those of you who are first timers, if you have any kind of questions, now's the time to ask. We would love to hear what you, any issues you have. So I had a great week. The main reason was that, you know, I post, as you know, on Instagram, I post a lot of my surgeries and love doing surgery, love soft tissue, love cancer surgery. So I had two, I mean, first, besides the fact, like I said, we had three cystotomies removing stones out of a bladder in the last 3 weeks, which is unusual. I mean, I'll do maybe, I don't know, five a year. I had three in 3 weeks. And I have another one coming up, I think. Sadly, it's another cat. One of the three was a cat. And this is a cat that already had what's called a PU. What is a PU? When you have male cats, typically female cats don't block as much as males. Why? Because the opening of the urethra, okay, at the vaginal canal is much wider than a male's. So males usually plug that stone, can leave the bladder, starts coursing through down the urethra, ready to come out, and all of a sudden, boom, gets plugged. What we have to do is we catheterize, we then try to push it back into the bladder and try, depending on what it is, some of the diets can be somewhat stone dissolving. It helps a little. Sometimes it works. Usually still we're going to have to go in, especially if it's a big stone. Anyway, this cat presents again. Not only hematuria, which means bleeding out of the penis, but it doesn't even have one anymore because the last time it was so small and this cat blocked a few times, they did what's called a PU, a perineal urethrostomy. That's where they literally, and guys, don't hold your feet together and cringe. They actually amputate the penis and they go all the way back to this gland. And that's where you want to remove it and then open up. Basically, you change the male's plumbing into a female. And it's called, it's a urethrostomy. You open it up, you pull the urethra out a little bit and you sew to the outside at the same area where it would have been, but now it's much wider and they can still, they can do everything they can. Well, obviously, oh, these cats have been neutered anyway, so it doesn't make a difference. So this one had the PU, had a perineal urethrostomy, and now is past stones again. And they're big enough, I don't think they're gonna pass. So now what does that mean? That means that we are back to another surgery. What's so sad about these cases are, and this is the take-home lesson, if you have a dog or a cat that is a stone former, that means form stones, and your veterinarian tells you you need to change the diet to one of these special diets, you gotta do it. Because so far, now it might be two of the three that I did, they were redos. Redoing because a year later, in the case that we had last week, the diet was never changed, even though they came back like at the midway point, I asked, I said, so how's the dog doing on the diet, on the new diet? No, we didn't try it yet. I don't think to myself, what? You didn't try it? I mean, how do you expect to make a change? So sure enough, stone former again. Now, unfortunately, they got it and they're going to change the diet. So that's what's going on with this cat. But I had two cases that were both, as I posted. One was Barney. Now, Barney had this huge tumor on his elbow, 16-year-old large breed dog. I mean, that's pretty amazing by itself. But it was getting bigger based on his feel and its location on an extremity, probably something called hemangiopericytoma. And, you know, they are very aggressive locally. They have a very low metastatic potential. That means probably not going to spread to the liver and lungs. So it was like, now what do you do? So we convinced the owners, because it was getting bigger and it was starting to affect his mobility, let me take it out. So I got as much as I could. They're very, very, very difficult to get out because they're so intertwined with the tissue. It's really, really bad. Anyway, we had it coming Friday for follow-up, took the bandage off. It looks amazing. And he is doing so well. And the good news is he's coming back. He's probably Tuesday or Wednesday, we're going to take the stitches out. But for me, you know, as a veterinarian, as a surgeon, knowing that these hands are helping this dog, I can't promise he's going to make it to 17 or 18. He's 16. He's already way past his longevity, statistical longevity, but he's doing great. His bloods were fine. Urinalysis, everything was good. I said, come on, we got to do it. If he looks this good on the inside, he will tolerate the anesthetic very well, which he did. So now it's just good knowing that I can't predict when is he going to go. It might be a year, might be more, might be less. But I will tell you, it's not going to be because of that tumor. And that, to me, that brings a lot of joy. Steph, hi, how are you? So question from, Potter, you have to help me on this one. Petter Alger, that's a good one. You have to tell me what it is. Potter means father. I know that in Latin. But my three-year-old cat has always had very loose stools. Is there a food that you can recommend that might help? She is currently getting Kirkland Salmon Filet Maintenance. Well, loose stools can be a number of things, number of reasons. Sometimes just simply adding some fiber to the diet. I mean, a cat, an eighth of a teaspoon of psyllium husk powder. Pure psyllium husk. Do not give the psyllium that is artificially sweetened, because that potentially could be an artificial sweetener like xylitol, which is terrible. Well, not terrible for us, terrible for cats. So anyway, we do not want to use that. And or adding a little cooked oatmeal or canned pumpkin. If that doesn't work, I sometimes put these cats on Flagyl, metronidazole. Again, a small amount, and see if that works. You know, typically, it could be something else that the cat is eating. If that's all he's eating, nothing else, and everything else is cool. Because when we see this soft stool in a cat that is otherwise okay, good appetite, right? Good coat, active, animated, everything else is normal. So it's just localized to probably the colon. So we say, okay, he's got this colitis, nerves, stress, anxiety, excitement, diet change, parasites, unlikely in a three-year-old cat, but if he hasn't had a fecal sample in a while, it would be worth just to rule it out before you start worrying about some sort of food hypersensitivity. Now, if all that is negative, you cannot come up with anything else, then yes, I would recommend slowly trying to switch onto a different diet. And if it is a diet-related problem, hopefully it'll resolve. But the only way to test it, but first I would rule out other things, because that, you know, salmon is probably good. It's a feline maintenance diet. It's a Kirkland. I know people are saying, oh no, that stuff is crap. And is it the best food out there as far as ingredients and the way it's made? Probably not. But, you know, a lot of these commercial foods, you have to go through a lot of testing, AFCO certification, et cetera. So I wouldn't jump to that yet. But again, it wouldn't surprise me after all that, it turns out to be just a food hypersensitivity, or more specifically, that food hypersensitivity. However, I would not jump to another salmon diet. I would jump to something else first. All right. Hello, Steph. Okay. Now, the warm weather, we talked about it just a little bit ago, 83 degrees here. That kind of brings me to a subject that we need to obviously discuss. It's great that here it is in May. We're already talking about it. Hopefully, it'll be a lesson throughout the summer. But we really do need to treat our animals in this heat differently than we would otherwise. So, too cold, those of you who live in climates where it gets below zero, I know Minnesota, Illinois, I mean, it gets pretty cold. Kansas, I've been there in the winter, February, in Kansas City. Not nice, not good. I mean, when I was walking 3 blocks, and when I got to my destination, I had to feel my ears. I felt like they were going to crack off. Then you know it's cold. Well, it's also that cold for our pets. So just like we have a lot of precautions during the cold weather, here are some, you know, hot weather precautions. Number one, exercise. A lot of these animals, a lot of you, it's nice outside. You want to get out. You want to work off the excess winter weight that you may have put on. And same thing with your pets. First of all, you don't go from 0 to 60, all right, in one day. So you got to pace it and slowly, gradually get them back into their routine, their summer routine. Number two, you don't do it in the heat of the day. I've seen too many animals come in with heat stroke because of they're running the trails at noon or 1 or 2 o'clock or 3 o'clock in the afternoon. So that's not a good idea. When you do exercise them, you want to do it early in the morning, late in the evening, and you want to make sure you have plenty of water with you and take plenty of stops. It's very important. Take some stops. Let them have a break. That's good for them as well. Now, also, just remember another couple of things. Let me just wave to you guys here. All right, Eloise, hello. Okay. If you need to give FleaMed here a round of adjustment, we'll talk about that in a minute. Okay, we got some questions coming in. So maybe let's talk to these questions because then we'll complete. We may get to some of these answers, things that I want to talk about in these questions. So we'll talk about that. But so far, it's plenty of water early and late in the afternoon. You got to read them, by the way. You got to read when they are starting to pant. Remember, especially dogs, they love us. They want to be with us. They'll do anything we want them to do. And they will actually overexert just to satisfy that need. So you got to be really careful. Read your pets. Learn. Watch the tongue. Watch the panting. Take a break with them. See if they continue to pant aggressively. Make sure you have water with them. What I like to do sometimes is I take like a bandana, I wet it, roll it up, and stick it in the freezer overnight. In the morning before the walk, I wrap it around their neck and tie it, and then it'll just add some chilling, and it seems to keep them a little more calm. But again, the water is essential. Foot protection, essential. Foot protection is also essential. Let's talk about that after a couple of these questions. So do we need FleaMed year-round or just when it's warm? Well, really that depends on the flea population. Typically, in many climates, we don't see a lot of fleas during the winter. Even here in LA, when it's not freezing cold, but we see a drop in flea population. Now, if you're in the Southeast, if you're down in Texas, if you're in Florida and around the Gulf Coast, Louisiana, you have fleas year-round, and you should never stop flea treatment. Now, having said that, the same thing goes because you have fleas and ticks. Now, if you're in an area where ticks aren't afraid of cold weather, so you still might get a lot of tick disease during the winter, in which case you want to continue throughout the year. And lastly, heartworm. If you're going to get either one of the newer isoxazoline treatments, which are NexGard, Simparica, or Credelio, Bravecto is also there, but Bravecto doesn't have one for heartworm. But you can get NexGard or NexGard Plus, Credelio or Credelio Plus, Simparica or Simparica Trio. The Plus Plus and the Trio, that takes care of fleas, ticks, and heartworm. So again, warmer weather, moist weather, humidity. So up in the Northeast, for example, where you have tons of mosquitoes, we're starting to see more and more mosquitoes here in LA as well. So then you want to get a Trio. And during the warmer weathers or the climate, you want to make sure that you're doing then for sure. And if fleas, ticks, or mosquitoes are year-round, then your protection needs to be year-round. So as I said, it all depends on where you live and what kind of threat you have during the different seasons. So if the threat is seasonal, you can use the medication seasonally. But if the threat is year-round, you got to use it year-round. 12-year-old female dog keeps getting irritated near her vaginal area, red and crusty, and smells anti-aggressive. Okay, so Cushing's test because of skin issues is not my first thought. Excessive water drinking and excessive peeing, that's my first thought. And then I would do a blood test. And if the alkaline phosphatase is very high, then yes, I consider Cushing's as a rule out. Just bad skin, I would say allergy. But here's what we see in when we have this kind of dermatitis in the vaginal area. We call it vulvar fold pyoderma. That is an infection deep in the vulvar folds, because when you have a dog that is either overweight or just has prominent vulvar folds inside around the vulva, it's dark, it's moist, and it's a perfect environment for yeast and bacteria. So you need to, first of all, check that. If you stick your finger in there, and I know it's gross, but there's something called soap and water. So if you have to, you can wash your hands afterwards. And if you feel a moistness, like stickiness, and you have a lot of black debris or dark debris on your fingers, it's vulvar fold pyoderma. And that's what I'd be treating. Now, if we have dogs that are not overweight and are always getting this vulvar fold pyoderma, then we have to do a vulvar fold plasty, which is we reduce the vulvar fold. It's a plastic surgery procedure. Most veterinarians should be able to do it. Unfortunately, many won't. I'm not going to get into a discussion about the lack of surgical training a lot of our new graduates are getting, but it's not a difficult surgery. And if there's concern and your veterinarian doesn't do it, take it to a surgeon or find a veterinarian that does. But what it does, basically, it reduces the depth of those vulvar folds. Now, another thing you can do is if you want to work with it, again, treat allergy, Cytopoint, Apoquil, or old-fashioned corticosteroid, antibiotic for sure. And for those, I really like either some sort of antifungal, antibacterial, something with chlorhexidine and ketoconazole. I, for example, have a spray called Dermamist. I also have my Derma Wipes, which have both of those ingredients for that reason. We see a lot of this. And also Neoprenif powder. And I'm not getting paid to produce any, to endorse these. Well, maybe on my product I am, but not the Neoprenif. It's fantastic. It's a powder. You kind of take your fingers, you spread the folds open a little bit and put this powder around. It's anti-inflammatory. It's anti-itch. It's drying. It's antibacterial. It's antifungal. It's got it all. And it really helps with Aries as well. So 100%, I would recommend that. Okay. And Cushing's only if the dog is, if all that fails and the dog is has a high alkaline phosphatase, I mean very high, it could be 800, 900, 1,000 or more. And you come in, not because of the Valgener problem, you come in because my dog doesn't stop drinking water and is peeing all over the place. That, I'd be thinking of Cushing's, or of course, diabetes or kidney problems. All right. Is it okay to keep a t-shirt on your dog to cover up stitches? Does that cause a problem to heal? And palm trees in the area eating little orange seeds. Okay, so we have two by Eloise. And I'm going to keep you guys guessing. This is my teaser because we're going to break this for a couple of minutes right now for a word from our sponsors. And then I will we'll come back on Pet Life Radio. And here on Instagram, I'm going to mute myself and we'll talk for a minute.
Oh, sure. It's all fun and games until someone ends up in a cone. That's right. We're animals. Deal with it. Pet Life Radio. Let's talk pets. Let's talk pets.
Let's talk pets.
On Pet Life Radio.
Pet Life Radio.
PetLifeRadio.com.
And we're back here live on Pet Life Radio. We're talking about baby teeth and neutering. So I like for all the teeth to be in. Now, fortunately, large breeds and giant breeds don't usually get deciduous teeth, so it's less common to have to worry about it. So I then look at how badly misplaced is the adult tooth. If it is badly misplaced, we got to get the baby tooth out of the way and give the chance of the adult tooth to go back into its normal position. If it's really not that badly displaced, then I would wait until I can do them all in one sitting or wait till neutering. With the large breeds, if I do have one, I may recommend 6-8 months or so taking the baby and then still coming back. Because the anesthesia for deciduous teeth is really quick. So it's not like it's a long procedure. So I would probably do that. But, you know, every case is individual. It depends on a lot of factors. So, but neutering, there you go. Small breeds, it can be really anytime after they're fully mature. Big breeds, I like to wait until they are fully mature, but it might be a year to a year and a half. A large breeds, and it could be up to 2 years in a giant breed. Okay, now let's go back to some great questions from Eloise Pet Rescue. Vicky always has good questions for me. Is it okay to keep a t-shirt on your dog to cover stitches? It won't impede healing because t-shirts are loose. It's not impede healing at all. But because it's loose, it may also not keep the animal away from licking. So it's a double-edged sword there. Is it convenient? Yes. Is it less obtrusive for the dog? Yes, because they can still get around it pretty easily. It's not going to confine them. We want something that's going to really protect the incisions. And it may not do such a great job. However, it is easier for you. And because it is not as confining, then the dog seems to like it better. All right, we have palm trees. My dog keeps eating the little orange seeds. What can you do to your dog? Mostly I catch her, but she would go. You know what? I'm not sure exactly those little palm seeds, how toxic they are. If they're swallowing them and they can swallow a bunch at once, I'd worry more of an impaction than I would a toxin. I don't think they're toxic, but that's something I would even have to look up. You can go to a toxicology, veterinary toxicology website, or ask Google, all right? Are orange palm seeds toxic to pets? A lot of things we try to avoid are not that they're toxic, but they're irritative to the gastrointestinal tract, meaning could cause vomiting, could cause impaction if they're clumped up together, but it's not like a poison. So that would be my answer for that one. Necessary to give your dog the lepto shot, what are side effects? All right, so of all the vaccines, lepto, it's very personal. I look at the lifestyle. For me, except for a couple of years ago here in LA, it wasn't lifestyle because they were finding positive lepto cases of dogs just going to parks because of the rat feces. So we haven't seen many cases. I personally do not do my dogs. If dogs are hiking, if they're going places where there are streams, either in canyons or in the mountains. And there are a lot of wild animals, wild rodents that might be urinating and defecating around streams. And the stool and the urine gets into the streams. Then the dog goes and drinks those stream water. Then yes, I would protect them against lepto. We don't see it very often. It is very serious. I've had a number of cases back a few years ago. Fortunately, they're all still alive. Some of them still have an active titer. And we have to keep an eye on the kidneys because it definitely can cause kidney problems. So that would be my criteria. What is your lifestyle? Do you take your dogs to these areas where the disease is prevalent because of these wild animals and wild rodents? If the answer to that is yes, then the lepto vaccine is a necessity. If it's not, then don't. Now, side effects. It seems, even though they've claimed, a lot of the companies claim that the lepto shot has gotten so much better and it doesn't cause. I've seen a lot of dogs that will have a day or two of soreness. I have never in all my years seen a dog die from a lepto shot. So get that out of your system. If Dr. Google says it's that dangerous, no, Dr. Google doesn't know. If there was one death and therefore you have to report it and Google gets a hold of it and all these people talk about to other people about what they read on Google, that's how it expands into like fear. But there's no doubt I get calls from people after a lepto shot, my dog's depressed, he doesn't want to eat, and it goes on for a few days, about the worst. So I would not use only the post-op potential problem as an excuse not to get it if your dog is going to be exposed. Why? Because the lepto shot's not going to kill him, but lepto can. So you got to do the right thing. So we got them all. We got them all. The palm tree seeds, the lepto shot. All right. Janice, JB, how you doing? Any other questions? Ask away. We got 3 minutes. So all right, there's one thing I wanted to talk about. And unless we get a question, that I will do that first. Okay, the question is, it's not really a question. I get a lot of questions in my practice. And I always like to share because I guarantee if I'm getting them, you're thinking about them. And that is food allergy. How many times the animal people come in and they're concerned about food allergy? Why? Because on the internet, it talks about all these food allergies. So let me give you what I know. And again, things can change. And probably. So foods can more frequently cause a GI upset than actual skin allergy. So keep that in mind. When I'm talking about food allergies, they're going to divide it into allergies that are affecting the skin and allergies that are affecting the GI tract. And the treatments are unfortunately pretty much the same. But so critical signs of food allergy, as far as skin, you're going to notice an animal that, first of all, is chewing its feet, especially front feet, licking like crazy, but enough that we see saliva staining. I have a lot of people that come in with dogs with just licking their feet, almost like a nail biter or a thumb sucker. It soothes them. It gives them some mental relief. That's not allergy. Food allergy dogs that have true food allergy, they also often you might catch them rubbing at their face or dragging their face against the carpet or a wall. Okay. And lastly, ears. So food, face, and ears. Those are the things that we most commonly see in dogs that are food allergies, and most importantly, non-seasonal. Why? Because unless you're changing your dog's food every season, okay, and they're probably eating the same thing, if it was true food allergy, but it only happened starting April, May, June, July, August, whatever, it's not food. Because why? Atopy, atopic dermatitis, okay, which is the inhaled allergen dermatitis, much more common, that is seasonal, and also could be licked for terrible ears. Ears that overlap. Ears get both, and even chewing the feet. So you got to be really careful. Dermatologists say that 15, maybe max 20% of all skin allergies are actually food related. That means 80 to 85% are not. So don't just jump to food allergy. Now, if it is, if you have everything that completely fits the bill, it's all year round, it's feet, ears, rubbing the face, all right, then I would look at the food. So a couple of things we know. It seems like the most common proteins that are implicated in food allergies are your poultry. So chicken and turkey, beef. Okay, keep that in mind. And as far as grains, it's corn, wheat, and rice. So the first thing you want to do is look for foods. And this is the same thing, by the way. Let's talk about the GI allergies, inflammatory bowel disease, okay, things like that. Those also could be food related. And we want to get them on hypoallergenic diets, single antigen diets, and best could be both, but it's not only single antigen, but it's either low fat and it is HA, which is hypoallergenic, or HP, hydrolyzed protein. So there, what we're looking at low antigen diets and single protein, single grain, or a single carb. It could be a vegetable, it could be a fruit, it could be an actual grain, things that the body has never been exposed to before. It's really hard to be allergic to something if the body has never seen it before, such as, and you're going to, some of these are kind of wacko, venison, bison, rabbit, alligator, kangaroo, salmon, most of the time, tilapia, cod, duck is a good one. So when is the last time a dog ate kangaroo or alligator? So you're looking for weird proteins. So chances are they won't have signs of allergy. At least it could happen 6 or 8 months later, they can develop an allergy, because they've already shown that they have that sensitivity. However, it's going to be a while. As far as grains, again, you want to avoid the cornbread. So you can look at things like barley, oats, sweet potato, quinoa. So again, things that they've probably never seen, or green pea and broccoli, cauliflower. So you can look for foods that have really weird, unique combinations that the body has never been exposed to before, and put them on that at minimum 6 weeks, might take 8. But here's the key. During this food trial, as we call it, called an elimination trial, if we truly suspect food allergy, it's going to take a while to see a result. And that also means 6 to 8 weeks. And also, you got to watch the treat that you give. The treats, they have to be the same as the food. So if you're going to buy a cod-based or a venison-based or a rabbit-based type, you need to get rabbit treats, rabbit or venison treats, the same things, the same protein, and very small amount. And don't mix it with something else. It's the biggest mistake a lot of people make. They feed the right food, but then they're going back to the regular treats. And guess what? There's chicken or beef in the treats. Well, yeah, that's not going to work. So you got to be really, really strict. That's my recommendation. How long can an IBD cat be on budesonide? That's a great question. So first of all, we love budesonide. It's a steroid that a lot of us are using over prednisone or in a cat prednisolone. And it really depends on, I like to, we start every day. Then we try to go to every other day. And I would just do routine lab tests, maybe every 12, 16 weeks or 4 months, whatever. And just make sure that their values, the liver values. One good thing about a cat when it comes to cats and steroids is they can tolerate the steroids way better than dogs. So it's almost, and don't get this the wrong way, they can tolerate it almost as they can with reckless abandon. They seem to do so much better than dogs do on steroids. They don't see the same side effects, and they do tolerate the steroids. But even still, sometimes we can't see how the liver is doing on an outward sign. So I would still monitor their bloods. And if their bloods are fine, they're doing fine, they're still maintaining their appetite, et cetera, then I would just try decreasing as much as you can. See if you can do it every other day, every third day. You get to the point where you're doing budesonide every third day, there's very little damage you'll be able to do. But you still monitor, but that's what I'd recommend. Now, if you stop and like after a day and they start, then you know you got some issues. Do you think apple cider vinegar with water can help with feet licking they clean with after a walk? Well, that's a really good question. If we think that the chewing is because of cleanliness or picking up some bacteria or something, I would imagine it could help. Personally, I've never tried it myself, so I can't tell you. I can't even tell you how it tastes. But if you're literally going to lick for feet, if it also helps prevent them from licking their feet, that's a good thing too. So there's no downside to it. There's nothing toxic or poisonous about it. So I would try it. And if it works, fantastic. And if it doesn't work, you could say, at least I tried. All right. Okay. I think, there you go, Julia. So I see a lot of names I've not seen before. Thank you for joining me. Please tell your friends. I'm here every Sunday morning, same time, same channel. If you have questions, reach out to me during the week. We get a great subject for me to talk about. And if not, if you want to wait until the show is live, then you can go ahead and ask me questions, et cetera. We'd love to answer them, help you out. So once again, you can reach me, Werbs_DVM, here on Instagram. You can reach me on Dr. Jeff at PetLifeRadio.com, and that's here on Instagram. And other than that, I think that's it. That's all we have time for. So again, tell your friends that if they would, first of all, I would love to have them join me and just check into my Instagram, only because I post really cool stuff. I get a lot of good feedback, especially my surgeries and the after surgery. Oh, the other surgery I was going to tell you about was amazing. And if you've seen my, I posted pictures, they were really gross. I even warned everybody, be careful. That was a dog. His name was Brian. And Brian was bitten. It was my rescue, went to a first foster, was bitten pretty badly, but they didn't know because of his long hair. Foster had him. He wasn't doing great. You'll know why in a minute. Went back to the rescue and then to another foster. The other foster noted a swelling around his neck. And when he was feeling it, he looked at his hands and there was like a gross discharge. So he brought him in and the gross discharge was draining two holes. They said he was trying to get under a fence and may have cut himself. No. Two holes like that, that is a dog bite from one of the other, somewhere along the line. This dog was bitten, but because of the long hair, was never really determined why or that it was even there until it blew up. So we knew we had to open up, put some drains in. Well, no, that wasn't enough. Check my Instagram. You're going to see what it looked like. It was absolutely disgusting. We had to cut away so much tissue, so much necrotic, dead tissue and smelly and pus pockets. It was just disgusting and horrendous. Poor, poor Brian. So we started on heavy-duty antibiotics, cleaned out as much as we could, freshened the edges of this disgusting wound, put sutures in, put a drain in. We just pulled a drain Friday. You would not believe what this thing looks like now. It is unreal. You would never in a million years imagine from what we did now, what it looks like now and what it looked like when we started. It is night and day. So I'm going to post the pictures that we took on Friday. Still not 100% healed. We're going to see him next week for suture removal. There's one little spot near where one of the drains put in that is still, it may need just a little refreshing of the tissue we call deep riding and then a couple of sutures. But overall, it's a new dog. And again, thinking about what we can do to help these animals. And this is why I get so excited about what I do. See you next week.
Let's Talk Pets. Every week on demand. Only on PetLifeRadio.com.